This is Latin Pulse, a weekly analysis of news and public affairs in Latin America. Brought to you in cooperation with American University's School of Communication in Washington, D.C. and Link TV. And now here's host, Rick Rockwell.
Bienvenidos and welcome to Latin Pulse. This week we have a special focus on elections. A handful of countries in Latin America will hold presidential elections in the next year, two of them next week. And we have the results to report of Argentina's recent presidential race. Here's a clue. Our pundits were right about the outcome. So let's go right away to Vanessa Hayes-Gonzati with the results of that election and a look forward to next weekend's elections in Guatemala. Vanessa also has the rest of the highlights of news from around Latin America this week.
Former Vice President of Guatemala, Eduardo Stein, says things could get messy if the second round election results in his country are too close. Guatemala will determine who their new president will be on November 6th. Polls show the two candidates, Otto Pérez Molina and Manuel Valdizón, are in a tight race. At an event held by the Inter-American Dialogue in Washington, D.C., Stein said the two major concerns of the population are security and economic issues.
That is a prominent issue for Guatemalan voters. Who could solve the insecurity problems of the country? But it's being a much more complex issue. It has also to do with income opportunities, job opportunities, and in general, the situation of the economy, which is the second, and in some territories, a distant second from the first motivator. But those are the two issues that will decide the vote of Guatemalans in the elections to come.
Even though he says he cannot predict the results, he assures that whoever gets elected will have to deal with budget and foreign policy issues. In Mexico, the administration of Felipe Calderón moves away from the fields and into the city to fight the country's drug war. According to reports by the U.S. government, since President Calderón ordered troops into the streets in 2006, marijuana farming has almost doubled in Mexico. This is causing increased tension between the two neighboring countries. One of the main strategies for the U.S. and Mexico for decades has been the eradication of crops in the field. U.S. official of the Drug Enforcement Administration, Rodney Benson, praises Mexico for its fight against cartels in the cities, but reminds the government that it needs to do both. President Calderón says the United States has done little to control the flow of weapons and drugs into Mexico, and that the demand of drugs in the north appears to be insatiable. Hermes Sánchez, a candidate for mayor in one of Colombia's southwest towns, quit the mayoral race after months of guerrilla pamphlets calling him a military target. Sanchez is the father of three, and rebels made it clear that his family would also be at risk. The regional elections will take place on Sunday, and according to experts, violent groups seek to decide who gets elected by making threats. Alejandra Barrios, director of Colombia's Electoral Observation Mission, says that local power is the real power in the country. The organization says at least 41 candidates have been murdered since February. That is almost twice as many as in the same period 4 years ago, when the last election for mayors, governors, and municipal councils was held. Former Argentine naval officer Alfredo Astiz is going to prison for life for crimes against humanity during the military dictatorship in Argentina from 1976 to 1983. Known as the Blonde Angel of Death, Astiz was found guilty of murder, torture, and forced disappearance. The court sentenced him and 11 other former military and police officers. They all worked at the Naval Mechanical School in Buenos Aires, which was the biggest secret torture and killing center set up by the military during what was called the Dirty War. About 90% of the prisoners never made it out alive. Less than a week ago, Argentina held presidential elections. The nation has chosen Cristina Fernández de Kirchner for a second term. So what helped her succeed? Nadia Baston has the details.
Cristina Fernández de Kirchner won the absolute majority, 54% of the votes, according to the final vote count for the general elections. Did it surprise anyone? Daniel Kerner was one of the experts at a panel at the Woodrow Wilson International Center in Washington. He says that this outcome was predicted long before the elections.
Everyone was expecting this result for the past several months, so there wasn't any surprise that she would do very well.
And she did, beating the runner-up candidate Ricardo Alfonsin by nearly 38%. Daniel Kerner says the Argentine government implemented good economic and social policies that are beneficial for the nation.
Feeling that their lives are better, especially in economic terms. Not only the economy has been growing at very fast levels, unemployment is very low, real income is rising, and the government has decreased the number of people that receive pensions and provided subsidies such as a per-child subsidy to improve their economic well-being.
Economists predict President Fernandez de Kirchner will have to face a number of fiscal and monetary problems in the next 4 years. But after her victory, she looked as if she's up to a challenge. Nadia Betson for Latin Pulse.
Well, that's all the time we have for today for the news from all around Latin America. I'm Vanessa Hayes-Gonzari, reporting for Latin Pulse.
Thanks, Vanessa. And now our first in-depth interview this week, where our focus will be the upcoming elections in Nicaragua. President Daniel Ortega is running for re-election, despite the fact that Nicaragua's constitution forbids consecutive terms. His main opponents include former President Arnoldo Alemán and Fabio Gadea, the owner of Radio Corporación, one of the leading conservative media voices in Nicaragua. Joining us to discuss the elections is political scientist Manuel Orozco, who is a senior associate at Washington, D.C.'s Inter-American Dialogue. Manuel is from Nicaragua, and he is an expert on politics in Central America. Welcome to Latin Pulse. What's your outlook for the Nicaraguan elections? Is this a case where the Sandinistas and Daniel Ortega easily maintain power?
Yes, this is an election that has been pretty much on the making for the victory of Daniel Ortega for the past 2 years. He crafted a political strategy that will get him reelected, not only from making sure that the political opposition will be fragmented, but also in terms of securing the support of the institutions, particularly the Supreme Court and the Electoral Council, for him to be considered to be reelected, to participate in a second round, on a second term. And this is basically the outcome of that. And his third strategy has been basically to utilize public support, public funding, to provide populist approaches to the population, and that has secured him substantial support.
There are two strong candidates on the right in this election, former President Alemán and, as we said, Fabio Gadea. Are there any alternatives on the left besides Ortega?
No. Ortega is the left. He represents basically the progressive view in Nicaragua, and he has monopolized that perspective. The party that is led by Gadea has a vice president runner, Edmundo Jarquín, who belongs to the MRS, the Movimiento de Renovación Sandinista, which is a reformist Sandinista movement that is split from the FSLN and criticized the hierarchic nature of the FSLN. But this is a party basically run by intellectuals, by upper middle class, progressive individuals who really don't have much close relationship with the base. And it doesn't have much support in general from the total population. Even the Gadea party, which is the second right now in the polls, is far behind from Daniel Ortega. The current landscape shows that Daniel Ortega has at least 50% support in the election, and Gadea doesn't have more than, so he's very far behind.
I'm wondering why the Sandinistas and Daniel Ortega continue to get this strong base support in Nicaragua, a very poor country, and one that some would say the Sandinistas haven't managed well at any time that they have been in office.
The reasons actually are pretty much clear. It's just a matter of understanding that no one has been prepared to take the risk to make some changes in the country. The first one is precisely that the private sector has given very low political risk to reform, to improve democracy in the country, and instead they have maintained a relatively warm relationship with the powers that be, including the FSLN, but also the group of Alemán. So that really basically has been a poor standing on the side of the private sector. The second reason is that the FSLN has maintained near dominance in national politics in 79. They are a very strong, organized, and powerful popular party. They have had at least 30% political support, and the opposition has never been prepared to recognize that this is a legitimate, valid political party. And the third issue is that this is a very fragmented opposition. The opposition in Nicaragua basically suffers from an ability to build consensus among its elites, among its leaders, and instead they fragment themselves with the belief that they have a better position at defeating the FSLN. And so you have a number of opposing groups, none of them that are prepared to form coalitions and basically have a one-by-one struggle against Ortega. The fourth reason is that you have a very weak civil society, to some extent repressed by the Sandinista regime. And then you have the problem of poverty. This is a very poor country. The population really needs to think of very practical ideas, one solutions that are short-term based, that deal with their day-to-day living, like getting food on the table, and Ortega has delivered that. So, you know, these factors really influence. The Catholic Church, which traditionally has been very influential in the country, is also an institution that has placed very low political risk onto challenging the powers that be. So they were prepared basically to get the blessing of Ortega in exchange of Ortega advocating for some conservative approaches. And the implications are just substantive.
I would like to talk about coalition politics in Nicaragua in just a bit, but first a technical note to our listeners that this week Manuel Orozco is joining us not in our studio, but he is joining us via Skype, and so there may be some technical sound issues that are different than we've heard in the past. Back to the issue of coalitions in Nicaragua. This is one of the critical studies of this particular election is that people have said there is no chance to defeat Daniel Ortega and the Sandinistas at the polls because there was no coalition. When there have been coalitions in the past where the various small parties and opposition parties have come together with one candidate, then usually the Sandinistas have lost. Is that true?
Well, the Sandinistas have only lost not exactly when there is coalition. They lost because their timing wasn't right to win. The time where there was a coalition that defeated him was in 1990, and that was basically a special circumstance. The country was in the process of a transition from war to peace settlement. There was pressure from the United States and other parts of the world to democratize and to push the Sandinistas out of government. From that point on, in 2005, the election that got Alemán, in 1995, excuse me, that got Alemán winning, it wasn't exactly a coalition. It's just that this was a party that has grown stronger. It's one of the oldest parties in Nicaragua. And then the following election that got Mr. Bolaños elected, this was the continuation of the Alemán government. And the continuation really reflected poor management, poor performance and leadership on the side of Mr. Bolaños, who had good intentions, but he really couldn't maintain the same type of follow-up that Alemán had kept. But in addition to that, his party was completely discredited by the fact that Mr. Alemán, the main leader of the party, had been accused and tried for fraud and theft and put in jail. So the party was basically weak. That's the stage in which you have substantial fragmentation among the different opposing parties. So in return, when the next election comes in, Ortega wins easily.
Do you have a quick prediction of what will happen?
Well, I can't predict the election because the election is already decided. So Ortega will win, but that's not my prediction. I think the critical issue is to see what are the implications of Ortega's victory. And I think There are four issues that one needs to consider. One is that he will win with a substantial majority. He will get more seats in Congress too, but he will also try to bring up more of a moderate kind of governing, try to build alliances, but with new political leaders, with new cadres who are not part of the group that belongs to Aleman's party, including Aleman, as well as the group that comes from Mr. Gadea. So what kind of coalition he will build in order to have a pseudo-government of unity is one of the issues that is likely to emerge. I don't think he will try to be this authoritarian ruler who will do whatever he wants because he has the power. And so there's been growing social protest from different groups, which is some sort of a paradox. On the one hand, you see that there is public support on Ortega, but on the other hand, there are certain issues that are being discussed. One of them is more liberties for civil society. A third issue that one needs to consider is that the economic growth of Nicaragua is uncertain. Finally, we don't know what's going to happen with the relationship to the United States. The United States has chosen to follow a path of relative indifference towards Latin America, and its only approach has been relating to organized crime and how to deal with that segment.
Well, we'll have to have you back on the program, Manuel Orozco, after your prediction that Ortega and the Sandinistas will triumph, and we can talk more about the coalition building and perhaps the renewed benevolence of that government. With that, thank you for joining us on Latin Pulse, Manuel Orozco of the Inter-American Dialogue.
A restless energy blows across the globe.
The desire for human rights.
Yet every day, people are tortured,
imprisoned,
executed,
or disappeared.
Simply for their identity or their beliefs.
That's why Amnesty International speaks out.
To protect people's basic human rights.
To change the sounds of suffering.
To the sounds of freedom.
Call 1-800-AMNESTY.
It's your human right.
1-800-AMNESTY.
Recently, Venezuela's Supreme Court made headlines because it rejected a ruling of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights regarding next year's presidential elections in Venezuela. The ruling involves Leopoldo López, the leader of Voluntad Popular, or the Popular Will Party. López is positioning himself as the lead challenger to Venezuela's president, Hugo Chavez. Venezuela's high court says López will be allowed to run for president, but it's unclear if he wins whether he'll be allowed to take office. This all stems from allegations of corruption leveled at López by a Venezuelan electoral commission, allegations that were never tried in court. Nevertheless, the commission ruled López could not take an office where he would oversee the use of public funds until 2014. Joining us to discuss this complex issue and the election process in Venezuela is David Smolansky, a student leader for Voluntad Popular. We should point out that much of the opposition to President Chavez has risen out of Venezuela's universities. David Smolansky, welcome to Latin Pulse.
Thank you so much.
Please tell us your reaction to the court's decision in the case of Leopoldo López.
Well, the court's decision in Venezuela is another sign that the government is really afraid that Leopoldo López could be the next president. This is not a new challenge that we are facing. The first obstacle that Leopoldo López and the people who's been with him since many years was in 2008, when he tried to be mayor of Caracas, and he was not allowed to. He couldn't even subscribe his name in the Electoral Council. So after that, it was created the Voluntad Popular, which is started as a social movement. Right now, it's a political party. And as you said, the Inter-American Court of Justice allowed Leopoldo López in September 16th of this year to register in the Electoral Council and participate in the elections. That's a very important decision from the Inter-American Court of Justice because it was the first case of political rights that was treated, discussed in that court. And, well, the Supreme Court in Venezuela then made this sentence that he could participate, that he could make a campaign, even he could be elected, but maybe he could not run as a president. Well, what we're saying right now in Venezuela, because Leopoldo López is now a pre-candidate and he's visiting every state in Venezuela, is, well, if he wins, who will say that he could not be a president, because it's not a thing that is against Leopoldo López. It's against the million of people that will vote for him. We're doing a very different work in Venezuela. In my case, I am the national coordinator of the youth of Voluntad Popular. We celebrated our elections 3 months ago, where more than 100,000 people participated, which was a very important thing that happened in Venezuela, because it was the first time in more than 20 years that a political party celebrated an open elections. And that's one of the things that Leopoldo López is so popular in Venezuela, because he promotes participation, he promotes democracy. He has opened the doors to many young that wants to get involved in politics and design different policies that we can to improve our country right now. So let's remember something. When Leopoldo López in 2008 was, for the first time, was not allowed to participate in the elections to be a mayor of Caracas, he was finishing as a mayor of a small district in Caracas. His name is Chacao. By that moment, he had a more than 90% of approval. And that's why the government is so afraid, because he has shown that with transparency and work ethics, things in politics in Venezuela and in public administration could be different.
You may or may not be aware that this week the Venezuelan embassy to the United States issued an open letter to people in America about this particular case, saying that the media had portrayed it incorrectly, that Mr. López was going to be given all of his rights to participate in the election, but that they also rejected the Inter-American Court's decision because they felt that there were some jurisdictional issues and didn't agree with parts of what the court had to say.
Well, again, as I said before, the government is really afraid of the chance that Leopoldo López could be elected as a president. Leopoldo López has been visiting every state of Venezuela since 2009. He has gone to every state like 4, 5, 6 times, which is not all the candidate has done that. And he knows very well right now the problems that we have in Venezuela. And also he has very good proposals to solve our problems, especially crime and health and education infrastructure. I have to say that 10 days ago, we have a survey that showed that almost 60% of population in Venezuela think that Hugo Chavez is afraid of Leopoldo López, that Hugo Chavez is afraid to compete with Leopoldo López for the presidency in 2012. The same survey shown that after Leopoldo López was allowed from the Inter-American Court of Justice, he became first in the service of the opposition pre-candidates with 34%. I'm saying this because before we faced the presidential elections October 7th next year, we're having primaries in the opposition in February, where a few candidates, which is a very important thing also for participation and democracy, because we're expecting more than 2 million people to vote on February 12th to elect our unique candidate to face Hugo Chavez.
How about some of these allegations that the Chavez government have put forward regarding Mr. López? They said that he's corrupt. They said that he represents the oligarchy in Venezuela, that he represents the long entrenched instruments that did not serve the country before Chavez and his supporters came to power. So how do you respond to those particular critiques?
Well, but Leopoldo has not even gone to trial in Venezuela. They just say he's corrupt. They just say that that he represents just a minority of people in Venezuela. But the thing is that he was not allowed to participate in elections in 2008, and he didn't even get a trial. That's the unconstitutional thing that he was faced in that moment.
This seems to be going at President Chavez at his strength, because he has been a populist, someone who has said that he's a champion of the poor in Venezuela, and has worked on social progress during his time in office.
Well, he's not a champion of the poor anymore. I could tell an example. For example, in 2008, when we have regional elections in Venezuela, a neighborhood, its name is Petare, which is the poorest area not only in Venezuela but also in Latin America, was won by the opposition. Was won by Mayor Carlos Ocariz, which is from another political party. And for example, the decrease of crime in Petare is amazing, how he has worked in just 3 years. So I don't think Chavez is a champion of the poor anymore. People are disappointed in Venezuela that the promises that Chavez made 10 years ago has not been accomplished. People are also seeing a guy that is almost 60 years old, which is now has apparently a cancer that has not accept some social programs, has not anything good for Venezuela, and there's a time for a new government, and that also, which is important from the opposition, that is right now united and have a public compromise to work all together, not just to win the elections, but to govern together to solve our problems.
If Lopez wins in the primaries, in this pre-election phase, is Venezuela headed toward a constitutional crisis then, if he has the potential to win?
Well, it shouldn't be a constitutional problem, because I have to remember that Article 23rd and 31st of our Constitution says that the Venezuelan state has to respect decisions that comes from an Inter-American Court of Justice. So if Leopoldo Lopez wins the elections in October, well, we'll respect the Constitution that everyone has to do.
And when we talk about October, we're talking about October 2012 is when these elections will take place.
October 7th.
So I'm wondering, your response to the government's charges, we never really got to that, about the fact that Lopez really represents the oligarchy in Venezuela, that he represents the interests of the empire, which is how the government refers to the United States. What do you say to those?
Well, it's just rhetorical speech that the government always has. The ones that are against the government represents the empire, represents the oligarchy. As I said, there's an example of what happened in Petare in 2008. There's an example of other places that has been lost, the government has lost. Well, the people and the international community has to be very aware of what's going on in Venezuela, that we promise that we are working together, that we are united, and we are sure that we're going to have a new government in Venezuela next year. And the more important thing is that we're going to work together to resolve our problems.
David Smolansky, thank you for joining us on Latin Pulse. David Smolansky of Voluntad Popular of Venezuela. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Latin Pulse is available on the web and via iTunes. And to see the Latin Pulse archives of video programs on Latin America, you can check out Link TV's website, www.linktv.org, and then /Latin Pulse, also all one word. That's www.linktv.org/Latin Pulse. And if you'd like to write us with your reactions to our program, please send us an email. You can find us at latinpulse.gmx.com. That's latinpulse, all one word, .gmx.com. Thank you for joining us this week on Latin Pulse. For associate producer Vanessa Jesus-Gonzalez and announcer Victor Kilo, I'm Rick Rockwell. Escúchenos otra vez. Gracias por su tiempo.
Latin Pulse is produced in Washington, D.C. at American University School of Communication and with the support of Link TV. Theme music provided by Link TV, and additional music from Canary Productions and Bath Time Music Publishing. This program is copyright 2011, Las Rocas Productions.